contrary to popular wishes, you didn't vote for us, but we're still here. This podcast is brought to you by a coalition. I'm Paul Hudson. What a great coalition. It fell apart so quickly. We need strong, stable government on this podcast, lads.
Who am I supposed to be again, Paul? Sorry?
You can be Graham Morrison.
So that's Graham Morrison, this part of that part. And I'm Mike Saunders, the other part.
I'm Theresa May.
And this is Season 2, Episode 8 of the Tux Radar podcast. Don't forget you can subscribe online at tuxradar.com/subscribe. And in this episode, we're talking Mandriva being up for sale, while Linux users donating lots of money to independent game developers and charities. We bring back the results of our Tux Radar challenge and our open ballot, should distros license codecs?
Right, it's time for the news. As you've just heard, Mandriva is up for sale, which is pretty much all I could work out from their website, because it's all in some foreign language.
Does it have a buy it now price?
I couldn't see any numbers mentioned, but the gist of what I've read is that they're running quite low on cash and they need some sort of cash injection.
Bottle of brandy and a packet of Gauloises.
That's what being French is all about, isn't it?
That so they're running low on cash again.
Again, yeah. 2008, wasn't it, the last time they were in...
Didn't last them long.
They were in bankruptcy protection.
Something just happens every few years to Mandriva.
Even before they were Mandriva, Mandrake had difficulties in about, was it 2005, 2006?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah.
Every 2 years, really, isn't it?
So, and at the peak of its success as well. Yeah. Graham, would you buy Mandriva?
I would for 59p.
On the App Store.
Well, there is a UK company apparently interested in bidding.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes. I think they make devices with Linux on. And that way, I guess, having their own distro makes sense. They can customize it more freely.
Right.
And go from there.
But...
This is Lightapp, isn't it?
Who are based
in the UK.
Wow.
From what I can sort of semi-translate, it looks like they're quite similar to Alteo in sort of...
Oh, the irony!
they host applications and they sell you this... or perhaps they just operate the services for this sort of thin client network-based computing.
Oh, wow.
Or that's what I imagine this means. Informatique Berger, en ligne. I assume that means online.
While Red Hat's caning in millions and millions of dollars, of course, Novell's not doing quite so well. Mandriva's just collapsing again.
Have they ever been able to make money? I mean, they've never been able to capitalise on their old popularity.
You've spoken to Gail Duval a few times, haven't you? The chap who founded Mandrake.
Yeah.
Did he mention anything?
Well, of course, he was unceremoniously thrown out of the company. Made redundant, as everybody remembers, and went on to found Alteo. I mean, that's a strange venture. I mean, that's funded by venture capitalists, and I don't know if they make much money yet.
It seems to have disappeared off the radar a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, but their mailing lists have fallen, and they did release version 2 of the online desktop late last year.
Right.
So, presumably they're doing all right.
I was looking before at the forum discussions about this on Slashdot and the like, and there were a lot of people felt. I think a lot of Mandriva users feel a bit bitter that Ubuntu has had such massive backing. Regardless, it didn't have to be financially successful. Shuttleworth came along with millions and squillions of pounds, and so I think there was that. I did see that sentiment, and I think I kind of spot them away because Mandriva has tried really hard. They pioneered the graphical installer. For Linux, and they've
a long time ago, to be fair.
A long time ago, yeah. But you know, they really tried to. They were the company you associated with newbie Linux on desktop. Yeah. When we started this magazine 5 years ago, it was Mandriva. Was
my
distro.
First distribution. I mean, I think we all loved Mandrake. I thought it was fantastic at the time. It enabled me to install Linux.
I bought the box set of 7.2. Yeah,
5 years ago. 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean. But they've never really been able to monetize it. I mean, they tried selling the boxes, and these days they sell their power pack editions. They still sell them.
They still sell them.
Yeah, so there's the free version, which is a bit cut down. Yeah,
I can see that working well as a supplementary income. You know, do your little bit to support them. But you're not going to make a business from that, quite frankly. No. Not with Ubuntu out there, even with Fedora out there.
Not after 10 years.
No. So do you think it'll get bought and turned into a tiny little distro? For one specific purpose or live on?
I hope it does get bought. I hope it does live on because I think it's still a popular distribution. There's still, the forums are always busy and a lot of people download it. So I hope it does live on. As to what people are going to do with it, I don't know. It's quite a good brand. you know, if it's cheap enough for a community to get together and buy the brand and buy the their development system.
Community-owned Linux distros. Yeah.
Wow.
Not cool. A bad idea, yeah. Not a bad idea.
You imagine the infighting already, so can't you?
Yeah, let's switch to Debs.
Liberté, Egalité, and all that lot. The second story, Android mobile phones are outselling iPhones. This is in the United States of America. Apparently, Android devices currently hold 28% of the mobile market, with Apple on only 21%.
So this is Linux.
That's great news
Apple,
for Linux, yeah.
Technically, in the mobile market.
Well, let's not get too carried away. BlackBerry is still the market leader on 36%.
That's just for pointy-head bosses, isn't it?
Well, sure. And Androids, of course, there is no one Android device, whereas the iPod, there is just one true iPod to rule them all.
Yeah.
iPod, iPhone.
iPhone, same platform, yeah. But
It's great. I mean, I think Google has done really well. I mean, they've created a viable platform in a relatively short space of time. I know Apple has done the same thing, but we're not used to something actually succeeding in the world of Linux. You know, and they should be congratulated for it. And, you know, it's a great little OS. And it will probably go from strength to strength from here on, because nobody can compete with Apple. It's the closest competitor and anyone can use it.
Isn't a great little OS rather faint praise?
Well, you know, it's a difficult subject, but yeah, Apple have got it right. It's difficult to beat them.
I bought an Android phone.
Did you?
In my head.
which matters just as much.
Well, I just didn't. I look at them and think, well, there's so much to choose from, and they've all got different specifications, and I'm not quite sure which one's good or not. And the fact that they're still changing their specification worries me immensely. It may be selling well, but that's, I think, because it has so many specifications. It can have free phones, that, you know, on contract, £20 a month or $20 a month, and hey, the phone's free. So, unsurprisingly, it's doing quite well.
But the fragmentation is a concern on the Android phones as well. You know, the different specifications.
That's success. It's like Symbian, you know. Who cares? Most people aren't going to care. They just want to dial a phone number.
I read just the other day that I think it was the Orange-branded Android phones in the UK have the Google Mail icon removed, and you can't access it normally through the Google Mail app. You can't even install it from the Android App Store.
Yeah.
So you're really, really limited in what you can do. They've put these limits on, massive amount of Orange branding on it.
Telcos have always done that, though.
Absolutely. But what it means, you know, you buy into the Android experience and then suddenly realise that you've bought into the, you know, Orange Samsung XYZ.
They've said there are now individual telco app stores, haven't they?
Right.
So there can be a Vodafone app store and an Orange app store.
That's crazy,
and AT&T
doesn't
app store.
It?
Yeah.
So much dilution. So much.
Yeah, we had the chance to finally say Android is a new platform, a single platform is just breaking up again. Maybe that's just the natural thing about Linux. It can't sit still and be standardised. It must naturally break.
I mean, it's a byproduct of all the freedom involved. Yeah, Linux is free and that's great.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
I have the right to choose my screen resolution.
Yeah, it gets a bit daft, doesn't it?
Right, that brings us neatly onto the third item in our news. This is the news that games company Wolfire, or Wolfire, is giving away, or hasn't been giving away. It's been offering a pay what you want scheme for a bundle of games, which is apparently put together, they'd cost, was it $80?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've called this the Humble Indie Bumble. They've called this the Humble Indie Bumble. And, it's a good. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. You got it wrong. You got it wrong.
Whatever. They've given it a really silly name. And it includes World of Goo and Penumbra, one of the Penumbra titles, and some other ones. And they've raised them. They've got an awful lot of money out of it, even though, you know, you can choose to pay just 1 cent or nothing. People apparently like a bit like Radiohead did with that free album that they did. They've got over $1 million.
$1 million.
$1,132,066 as of about 10 minutes ago when I printed this information out.
Wow.
They've had, over 123,000 people contribute at an average contribution rate of $9.15 each.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It's great, isn't it? And DRM-free.
And what's the average people are paying?
Well, it differs. There's a breakdown here by platform.
Oh, wow.
The average overall is $9.15. The average amount that a Linux user has contributed is $14.56.
Wow.
And that's compared with Mac users contributing $10.22.
Really?
And stingy Windows users contributing only $8.03.
Can we assume that Linux users are richer then?
we can assume that Linux desperate. Users are richer, but more than that, Wolfire is giving a percentage of this donated money to charity.
Ah, cool.
So not only are Linux users better, we're richer, we're also morally better.
Actually, yeah, we are better.
Yeah, we're better people. Those two charities are Child's Play, which provides computer games for kids' hospitals, and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which I didn't find out what they did.
They play Frontier a lot, I imagine, which is great.
So there you go. We're great. You're great, listeners.
It's much more than I thought people would pay. Yeah. I mean, it's more than I probably would have done, to be honest.
That's 123,000 people who bought the bundle. Mm. Wow. Yeah. That really is impressive.
It must include, 100,000 people paying a single cent as well.
100,000 people paying $200.
One person gave $3,000.
Wow. Whoa.
I gave him $40 to try and drag the next total up slightly.
Right.
well, because we account for 25% of their sales, which is mental. It shows that, they can actually make money by supporting Linux. It supports Windows, Linux, and Mac out of the box for all the games, all six games, support all the platforms.
Right.
They've said also that they're going to give away several of the games as free software.
Okay.
Open source.
Right.
Shortly. Not including World of Goo, sadly. World of Goo isn't one of the ones.
I don't blame
away.
Him for that.
No, really. That's quite good, yeah.
He's onto something there.
We gave World of Goo our top stuff award in the magazine, 10 out of 10. You can read the view online. It was a great game. That alone is worth a donation. And it's really quite sad that seeing a lot of Windows users pirating the game bundle.
Yeah.
Downloading the game for free. Rather than pay 1 cent, pirate the game for free.
I mean,
that's pathetic.
Could this then be... Is this something we can use as ammunition to say, to the great big software houses and MPAA and RIA and look, the people will pay for stuff if they really want it. People are happy to pay money for things if they love it.
Well, yeah, the justification for not porting some certain things to Linux has always been that the market share is just too small to make it worthwhile.
Right.
But if, we can prove here that Linux users are willing to pay for stuff.
So they might pay a premium to get a game on Linux, pay a bit more.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've already saved a lot of money by using Linux in the first place.
And also, one factor is that we're overlooking is that the number of games that are available on Linux is so small that if you were to introduce something like Half-Life for Linux, you'd have a huge audience of people who possibly don't play games anyway.
Say, we finally got a big AAA title for Linux.
Competition is low in the Linux gaming sector, so get in now.
Although I would say it'd be still a hard thing to try and convince EA to do this because, it's $1 million across five companies, so 200,000 each. And that's we only got a quarter of those sales, so that's 50,000 for Linux users, and half of that went to charity. So 25,000 users, that's what Linux contributed to the end result per developer, which is still great money if you're an indie developer.
Well, if it's an easy
port,
EA
realm. Yeah. Well, that's it. Presumably, it's Windows, Mac, and Linux is free because it's coded with the Mac, I presume, something similar to that.
Yeah.
Which is great, but EA isn't really going to go for that kind of change for them.
No, but it's a good start, isn't
it? It's a great start. More free games is great.
Right, it's now time for the You Dare Us section, which is my personal favourite section.
And mine, actually, Greg.
Of the podcast. I didn't really understand what we had to do for this podcast. Can you explain again what it was you wanted us to do?
It was your idea.
create some content for tuxradar.com, I think, was the general idea.
Yeah.
Which we've all mostly managed to do, with the exception of Andrew, up until today, all with completely different angles on the task. And it's going to be very difficult to judge because we didn't actually talk about how we were going to judge it.
Paul
says he just wins. That's fine by me. But yeah, I mean, what on earth can we talk about?
Do we have to judge giving away such awesome free content?
No, we should let the readers decide.
Readers?
Yes, the readers on tuxradar.com. And viewers, because you did a very good video.
Thank you.
It was excellent.
Are you voting for me too then?
I didn't like the way I had to download it before I could view it, but it worked really well.
Well, you don't have to with newer Firefox versions.
Because I tried Chrome, you see. I had to download
this dodgy
closed source. I thought it would work, you know, but it didn't work.
No, if you have Firefox 3.6, I believe, it should play Theora's in line.
Right.
You just basically reference, click on the movie, it'll just play.
Right.
And if you're on other platforms, I think you can. I think it was QuickTime. I think you could play the MOV version, the H.264 right, version, right. And play with QuickTime. But both should play in relatively decent browsers.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it played back fine. It was great. It's really nice to see something.
I think
like
with HTML5, I'm not sure how it works, but you can say, here's a video, and here's the first source, H.264, here's second source, OGG. And it'll try and play the first one. If it fails the first one, it'll try and play the second one,
right.
I think. So it won't try and play both, it'll only play the first one it can play. I think that's how it's supposed to work. So I could do some sort of HTML5 magic.
Lovely, yeah. Embedding tags and...
No, no, it's video. It's video tag, isn't HTML5?
Just video and then, yeah. Yeah. Then the URL.
For listeners who haven't actually seen what Paul's done yet, he did a quick guide to creating an interactive Python application using GTK and WebKit. It takes about 15 minutes and he does it with a screencast while he talks over the top. And it's great. You can see exactly how it's done. And it's very easy to follow.
So that's what I've done. I'll tell you what Mike's done, shall I? Mike's written an opinion piece about the fragmentation in Linux and whether it's good or bad. And I think your conclusion was it's bad, isn't it, really?
At the base level, yeah.
I think you feel it probably,
choice is good.
You probably it's feel it. Choice, Mike.
I think Mike probably feels it more than the rest of us, given that he has to do this stuff all the time.
Yeah, but you're trying to give instructions to people to run software on multiple distros. Yeah, I think what I'm trying to do is to throw into the air the discussion, the argument. We all like competition between the stuff we run on our desktop. What browser should I run? What word processor? But, you know, when it comes down to things like user management tools and package management tools, these are things that should be the same.
We need a standard base.
Yeah, these should be consistent across distros. So you can say, whatever distro you're running, click X, Y, and Z to do a simple task. I love competition. Competition is the driving force behind innovation. But at the base level, it's gone a bit mad. User management tools all do the same thing. And that's just one example I give, but I'm talking about all sorts of stuff.
Well, within an hour, it had a lot of responses, and I think a lot of divisive responses. People feel strongly. Some people feel strongly the same way you do. Other people feel, you know, that's the strength of Linux. It's the same argument.
Well, I don't think there's an easy solution. You can't easily force people. You can't, and nobody should have the right to force anybody else. But I think it would do us good for Linux as a whole if we could, as using distro makers, just settle down at some point and say, you know, let's have all the different distros and desktops and software we want, but let's have Linux 2010 is the platform. Here's the base level that's the same.
Well, obviously, overseas listeners may not realise this, but we've got a new government in the UK, and they've had a coalition form between two different parties.
Mm.
And the former coalition have had to sit down at a table and say, go through their policies and say, yes, no, maybe, in between, and come to an agreement on all these things. Wouldn't it be really, really good if the top sort of five distros, sort of, you know, 95% of all users, could sit down and say, okay, what can we all agree on? Or, you know, do you mind changing, to this package name for this really core thing, rather than this package name?
Like, for example,
Dev rather than Devel or whatever. Agree on the small things. Agree on many, many things like that. And actually, you know, we've still got some of the same problems.
Mm.
You know, RPM and Deb are big problems, but we can fix so many small things. Quickly.
And you can do it without sitting there. You can do it without losing face as well, can't you? Like we see in this case, we've got two parties.
Well, for the greater good.
The greater good of the nation.
We have big strong disagreements. But, you know, say we have big disagreements on this, we're never going to agree on that, so we'll leave it out of the question. You don't have to water yourself down or pretend to put on a smiley face. You can say these things aren't going to work. But, yeah, at least try and make a start. There's so many areas of agreement in the Linux community where there's actually fragmentation just for the sake of them being different. Because we're going to do it this way or we're going to do it that way. Put those things together and we'll all have a nice cup of tea.
What did you do, Graham?
Yeah, I did a bedtime story. Because I really didn't fancy writing anything that was work-like.
Neither did I.
So I wrote a short piece of science fiction.
That's it. So was that the R button you press on the keyboard or something at the beginning? I don't understand. How did it work?
I understand. I should keep an air of mysticism about the whole thing and not explain what it all means.
Oh, okay. Like American Pie. No one will ever know what all the metaphors mean.
Who is your survey about?
It's about Warren Beatty.
What did you do, Andrew?
I failed. I thought that the idea of working for free when I was really busy already was horrible, so I didn't do anything.
Well, the rest of us didn't during work hours. That was a solution.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, maybe I didn't think of that.
Well, there's still time.
There is, you're right.
We look forward to seeing your results tomorrow, perhaps.
So how do we decide who wins, really?
I think everyone wins this one. Really? Really?
Everyone wins, especially me.
Well, we can ask our listeners.
Well, we can see what happens over the next 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, all right. Next 2 weeks, listeners, post a comment to this podcast. And
what you'd like to see more of?
No, because they're going to say more videos about Python.
Well, you could pay someone to do it.
That's true, I could, but it wouldn't work too well. Oh, well. Okay, listeners, post a comment. What you'd like to see more of, we may reserve the right to ignore whatever you say. But at least tell us which one you preferred. And keep in mind that Andrew will post something dramatic and interesting in the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
Or so.
Bum, bum, bum.
Right, so we need to come up with something else for next time.
Another 2 weeks of fun.
What else are you short of? What other kind of content are we short of? Not hot picks?
I didn't like the idea of work, so can we do something play related?
That's a brilliant
like
idea.
Like games or something.
Can I like sit and play Tetris for a few hours?
Oh, off 2 weeks.
I'd love that. You'd never be able to hide the blocks from your brain again. Everywhere you look, you'd see blocks falling down after 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks Tetris would get a bit mad. Well, what other games are there that are good?
Okay, well, we did talk about this before, and we thought it would be a good idea to set up a BZ flag server, or a BZ flag server for those of you in Australia.
This is the 3D tank game, internet-enabled tank game, a bit like old combat.
Mike spent years perfecting.
none of the rest of us have played for 10 years, since it was the only thing that came with Mandrake Linux. But we were thinking, if we can get it set up, setting up a BZ flag server, and you can dare us in the arena, and we'll run away.
Bagsy, I'm on Mike's team.
So when would we do it? We'd have
I don't know.
If we're inviting people to play, there should be some...
We'll set like a 1 hour, 2 hour block aside in like a week's time. We'll have to try and get a server set up somehow on the BZ flag system. Not quite sure how to do that, but
it's not our idea.
Might find out. Then like from 3 till 5 in the afternoon here in UK time. Cool. Get whipped to pieces by foreigners at BZ flag.
So we could go to the pub then and come back at 3 o'clock with our reflexes sharpened.
If the pub has Wi-Fi, we could actually...
Brilliant.
So what will happen is we'll post a story to TuxRadar in a week or so outlining the plan with hopefully some way to connect to the server and a time.
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome.
And with that gauntlet well and truly laid down in front of you all, come on then if you think you're hard enough, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week. In the hot seat where it's my turn, and I have managed to write LSB on every part of our board, and our open ballot, should distros license codecs?
It's up to you. Right, the funnest, hip-hoppest happening part of the podcast now, Discovery of the Week, where we tell you the wonderful joys and fantastic things we've discovered in the free software world, or indeed the wider computing world, or indeed in terms of history and pubs and anything else, in the last fortnight. So who looks like they're really, really eager and willing to go first? It does look like Graham because his mouth's closest to the microphone.
It's funny because I totally forgot about it until just this second. I looked down and thought, we're supposed to have a discovery of the week.
You never forget when you discover.
But I did discover a couple of things, and the thing is I can't remember the name of what I'm going to discover.
Okay, let's call it X.
But it was on it's a KDE module plugin for the screensaver module in
K screensaver.
It's not K screen screensaver.
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 Anyway, it replaces the module where you can choose between a picture or a slideshow with one that runs scripts. So I will put the name of it on the in the podcast notes. What happens then when you can run a script is that there are several supplied with the package where you can grab images from the internet or off your camera or off a photo repository and change your backgrounds as and when you want to automatically.
Oh, like APOD?
Yeah, exactly like APOD. I had to modify it to work with APOD because the ones that it came with didn't include APOD. So, yeah, astronomy pick of the day, lots of nature stuff. It's something I've wanted because you can't do it through Dbus as you could through the old DCOP format. And it's a great little addition. It should be part of KDE by default because it's cool.
Well, there we go. If
whatever the name of it was.
When and if Graham finds out what it's called, Graham does make the podcast.
It's got a weird long name, you know. K must download scripts and replace the default screen thing.
Well, if you can't find it, just Google that. Google what Graham's just said, and I'm sure it'll turn up in the first 20 pages of hits somewhere. My discovery is something I don't know. Some of you might know. I think Paul might actually have heard of this before, but it's mono no no. Anybody heard of this? You guys heard of this?
Is that a double negative?
No.
Is it the Zapper?
It's an Ubuntu or Debian package that introduces an intentional conflict with mono packages. So if you install mono no no, then it will stop you from ever accidentally getting mono on your system. if you've got mono no 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 and you try to install FSpot, then it will tell you it conflicts with everything, you know, because that'd be the worst thing in the world to have mono on your system, presumably. So. You know, I think it's a fascinating type of approach here. It's a bit out of date at the moment for the latest Ubuntu, but I'd like to see this expanded. I'd like to see other packages like
Linux
like Go No No. So you don't want OpenOffice on your system ever, or Evo No No, because you don't want that Evolution data server running in the background all the time, occupying 250 megabytes of RAM. So there should be more of this stuff. X No 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 No.
Up with this sort of
thing. Yeah.
Can we have mono no 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 no?
Hey, so that blocks.
Try to install mono no no. No.
Yeah, exactly. It's like boycott Novell.
But yeah, make it. That would be that'd be brilliant. Next in this circle of fun is Andrew.
Woo! I've been really busy working on the magazine and reading the election coverage obsessively. Like, you know, the 24-hour rolling news where nothing happens. They've just got to fill it with gibberish and speculation.
But his plane took off. And landed again.
There's a car. We're following up. It's towards Buckingham Palace. We're not sure who's in it.
They're packing bags.
Whose bags are they? What's in those bags? Artist impression. But I did have time this morning to note that I get an email from Amazon saying, you know, based on what you've bought already, we recommend this to you. And based on my buying Nick Cave's Murder Ballads about six months ago, they're now saying I should buy the new Lily Allen album.
Wow.
Which really tickled me. And it's not really... It was on my computer, so I think it counts. I can sneak it in.
So there are a lot of people out there like you who buy Nick Cave and Lily Allen. So fair enough.
Obviously, it's a natural fit.
It is. It's just the progression.
But there is Kylie Minogue on that Nick Cave album. So, you know, there's probably a link to Pop Damsels.
Yeah. And finally, Paul's three discoveries of the week.
No. My one is, I have two. The first one, quite straightforward. I really don't like Ubuntu Lucid Links.
Oh,
I've installed controversial. It. Installed it two or three times now, and I'm thoroughly disappointed. It's a massive step backwards.
You've installed it three times. Do you think reinstalling it would make it better? Or?
No, because I always install things in virtual machines.
Right.
And I've got one which is plain vanilla, one which is modified to have all my own stuff on, and one which I use to record the Python stuff on. It just comes fundamentally broken, which is such a stupid mistake to make. I mean, Graham already told me and off the air about the fact that it shipped with a bug in Kubuntu with Grub, which had caused dual booting problems. Mm. It was fixed in Ubuntu at the last minute, but not for Kubuntu, which is why did it even bother going out with that rather than delay another day? But you know, when I put it into VMware, which is I think a lot of folks will do to test it out, it wouldn't recognize the keyboard on the login screen. Yeah, so you couldn't log in, you couldn't type your password. And the only way to type your password is to bring up the on-screen keyboard, you know, the type it in. But when you bring up the on-screen keyboard, it appears, then goes away again. You have to reboot to make it appear. And so eventually you make it appear, log in using it, and then once you're logged in, the keyboard just works fine.
Right, so it's not a hardware detection issue.
It's just broken on the login screen.
Mental.
You'd think they'd have tested on something that doesn't change very much. VMware, all versions don't work very well. Or I put it in, and it's okay, you've got to install 60 megs of patches, fair enough, a week's gone by, fix the early patches, put it in. It said, do you want to install Grub as one of the questions on doing patching? What does that mean? It was like, skip was one of the options, wasn't it? A skip installing Grub? No, I quite like Grub, but fortunately, I know what Grub is. what if people didn't know what Grub was? It'd be even more confusing. And I know Mike found lots of crashes in various applications and stuff. It's just completely unacceptably bad.
Yeah, I have found little glitches and flaws. I mean, and also usability things that should be sorted out. You know, right click on the trash can, it says empty the recycle bin or
the waste basket.
Empty the waste basket or view deleted the items. Deleted items folder. Don't use different terminology for the same thing. It confused me, and I'm an Uber nerd. So
they still have the safely eject
and remove.
And mount as well.
It actually had three options for a drive in the early betas. They managed to narrow it down to two. Wow. Oh, weren't they great?
Toast is good.
Yeah.
And the left-hand buttons, I've actually changed already. As you say in my video, I put them to the right straight away because it was stupid. It was fundamentally, when I maximised the window, there was too much stuff in that corner. And the whole right-hand side of the window was just empty. Nothing there. And I thought, well, it's a gigantic waste of space.
That's for upgrades, isn't it?
So basically, what it comes down to is I think it's the worst Ubuntu for a very long time. You know, I think 6.06 was better than this.
Really?
But this is a long-term support version, isn't it?
Hooray!
So does that mean that they'll be supporting grub problems for the next however long?
Well, no, because obviously the exact set of updates I issued will not be available in 3 or 4 months. They'll have new updates, and they may just fix these problems. You know, 10.04.1 will come out, and it will hopefully mature into a good Ubuntu release. But they've basically stuck to their crazy release cycle rather than saying, okay, put it back 2 weeks and fix these similar problems.
A week or 2 weeks really can lasting. Make a lot of difference. I mean, Fedora folks have announced very close to their release, Fedora 13, they're just going to slip by a week.
Yeah.
And fair enough, you know, that's what happens. And yeah, we don't, none of us like Microsoft here, but they do have huge kind of gaps in their development cycle between a beta and a release candidate.
5 years. Between XP and Windows 7.
Yeah, but they do have these huge gaps, and whereas in Ubuntu land, you've got a beta 1 week, and then a release candidate another week, and then a release.
Yeah.
This is big stuff now, millions of users of Linux, and it's treading on.
So, that's my discovery that all my expectations for a great new LTS release, and I did have my hopes, I agree, have just fallen flat in their face. Although I have to admit, having Python, GTK, and the WebKit thing installed as standard was very cool for my project. It just works. The other thing I discovered very, very quickly is that game support on Linux continues to suck. And I'm thinking of maybe releasing lots of source code I've got stacked up for things like the iPad or the iPhone that I'm just sitting around that are cross-platform. I could release them all into the Linux space and hopefully generate some interest. So if listeners are interested in helping make games for Linux, drop me an email at paul.hudson@futurenet.com.
It's time now for In the Hot Seat.
Wow.
And that, scared.
And that fiery furniture is today occupied by Paul Hudson.
Is it the Paul
Thank
Hudson?
Thank you. The Paul Hudson, the one and only
Microsoft employee.
That bloke. the weatherman. Who was on Look North. who's going to spin the... What's happened to the wheel?
I told you.
What has happened to the wheel?
I thought you were joking.
I've written LSB in every single one of them. Even over grub.
should we bother spinning it then? Or,
well, you can try if you like, but it's very difficult. I suspect the answer may be LSB. I feel quite passionate about this.
Oh, well, I think we may as well run through the motions just for form's sake. Graham, you're closest. Would you like to give it?
Yeah, okay, here we go.
Activate the queen, Graham.
Ready, go.
LSB, 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 LSB,
LSB,
LSB,
LSB,
LSB. It's LSB. Fantastic. Well, there you go.
That means you have 1 minute starting in a bit to talk about LSB.
Which is, just as a reminder, the Linux standards base.
Who's got the squeaky toy?
I'm not good in that. I've forgotten it again for the third week in a row.
Oh, no. Someone's going to have to imitate the squeaky toy.
Graham can do that. Graham's our sound effects man.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Are you ready?
When you're ready.
Okay, so now. So the LSB was created to increase compatibility among Linux distros and enable software applications to run on any compliant system, even in binary form. That's what they said. I've had time to prepare that. That's what they said on the website. That's rubbish. It's absolute lies. 64-bit versions have been in there for at least 4, 5, 6, even often 7 years, and it still doesn't work at all. The last version's 18 months ago, and it includes glibc from 2006. After 9 years, there are only 6 applications that are LSB certified, which is pathetic. I mean, why are we bothering this when it favours things like RPM over deb, despite 3/4 of Linux users using deb? It's the de jure standard rather than the de facto standard, which is pathetic. Linux has almost no binary compatibility. We should just forget the LSB and say things like, let's have standard package names, let's have su and sudo sorted out, let's have things like SCL and Vorbis, things we actually use included by default. Build your own compliant distro, fair enough, we can build our software against it, but there's a bigger case to have the standard modified to fit applications rather than have applications modified to fit the standard. It's that simple.
That was
That was weird. A strange version of our squeaky toy. Perhaps you could scrap the squeaky toy.
Squeaky Graham.
I was being a clanger.
That was good. Can I have 5 seconds more?
Of course you can, Paul. You're in charge.
I want to propose on the podcast a new LSB.
Okay.
I call it Debian. Change the KDE, change the XFCE, change the Rat Poison if you want. I don't care. Just use the same base. It's that simple. All built from the same base, and we're done. It's that simple.
Debian is strong and stable.
It is.
Good idea.
I agree with those sentiments and would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
I agree with Paul.
I agree with Paul.
At Paul's fault.
Right, it's now time for the open ballot, my second favourite part of the podcast.
And your second section of this podcast,
yes,
actually.
Yes, indeed.
Nice work.
It is this fortnight we're asking, should distributions license codecs? This is in light of Canonical licensing H.264 for use by its partners, not in the main Ubuntu release, but in people who actually want to redistribute Ubuntu with something like MPEG-4 support. The only problem is it's proprietary. I don't know whether they'd use a closed source implementation of it or X264. But should they do it? Should it be encouraged? And what are the consequences of them doing so? Well, by the time we did this podcast, I think we had about 15 responses. Yes and no's. The first one came from Anonymous Penguin, not verified. He actually says Sugarland, whatever that means. Video is moving to H.264 compression and Canonical needs to keep up to date. To stay number one, we need to allow end users to play DVDs, watch Flash movies and more. That is the core issue. I think, if I may speak for Canonical, I'm sure they're doing it because they're not so interested in being a Linux distribution anymore. They want to be an operating system that competes with OS X and Windows. What do you guys think?
I kind of agree with that. What was his name again?
Sugarland. He was Anonymous Penguin in the comment, but he finished off saying Sugarland. So unless he was saying Sugarland randomly at the end of his...
Yeah, I think distros should do that. Distros should make it easy. That's what a distribution is, rather than going out and downloading and compiling your own kernel, X, GCC and all that. We have Linux distributions that bundle things
and you can
in a
choose.
Convenient package. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think they could link to Fluendo.
Yeah?
Fluendo provides legal codecs for all these things. And you can just say, yes, I am happy to pay, 20 euros, whatever. How much it costs to get all the codecs under the sun. They think they do Windows Media Video, they do Windows Media Audio, H.264, MP3, DVD for, 20 euros or so, 30 euros, I forget how much it is, which is cheap. So you can just click a button. I want that.
Yeah. But, what are you actually getting? Are you getting a binary version of the codec, or are you getting the kind of indemnity policy against patents?
Yeah, from Fluendo, you get a GStreamer plugin.
Right.
So anything that uses GStreamer will be able to play any of those formats straight away. They work quite closely with GStreamer, actually, to make it work.
Right.
I think they support a lot of distros, too, don't they? I think they support a variety of distros.
Yeah, I mean, it's there in Fedora, isn't it? Rami Tayaba. Apologies if I've got the name wrong, says, without having any context, then absolutely not. However, it's not Ubuntu's fight right now. Google and Mozilla have way more leverage than Canonical, given the market share. Google is rumoured to release VP8, which is that company, it's the company's codec they bought last year.
Onto.
Yeah, that's right, Onto. Thanks. VP8 seems to have a lot of potential, and Google may, it's a video codec, and Google may release the source code, making it open source, and perhaps... We've talked about Ogg Theora in the past and its relatively poor performance in comparison to H.264. Perhaps VP8 will succeed where Ogg Theora is failing. And if something like Chrome and YouTube were totally integrated with one another and the codec, it could become brilliant.
I think it's good if we've got to do this sort of stuff. You're never going to win people over to an operating system if you put up a lot of barriers in the name of your own personal politics, but I think it's a good idea to make it clear to people, if you have to make these steps, like Paul was saying, go ahead and buy this Fluendo codec pack, where you're breaking the limits between freedom, no freedom. So if you install a free open Linux distribution, you see all the amazing software you can get for free that's developed by the community. This is what the community can do. unfortunately, because of problems X, Y, and Z, if you want this feature, these features, you have to go and get proprietary software. So you should, you know, it should be easy to get because other people, otherwise people can have a horrible desktop experience and Linux will go nowhere. But at the same time, as long as people are aware of these fights and these battles to try and keep the internet and information free, then that's great. I think it's a good compromise.
I would add to the VP8 thing that apparently is indeed superior to H.264, but it has two major problems of being adopted like this. First of which is that Microsoft has said they will only support H.264 Internet Explorer 9 for HTML5. Only one, and it's
H.264. Maybe that's why they've said it.
You possibly, know. Yeah. But the other, other problem is that one of the other big players is Apple. And Apple and Google don't get on terribly well right now. So if Google says, hey, use our codec, Apple might go, no, actually, we'll just stick with our one, H.264, which works fine.
Yeah.
What about hardware decoding as well? I mean,
there's lots of them already, yeah.
For VP?
No, for H.264.
What about the Google as well?
I have not hardly any. None that I know of.
But then that's another limit as well, isn't
it? It is, yeah. For small devices that have got built-in hardware decoding.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is interesting is that I think there's a difference between adding something like Flash support or even the legal version of DCSS to play DVDs, they're proprietary closed source products. There's a difference between those and H.264, where the X.264 implementation is often taken as being better than the official implementation, and it's open source. And so the only real stumbling block to using it is the threat of patent action against you for using it. So what are your...
Is X.264 the encoder?
Yeah.
So that makes better videos than the official tools.
It makes better videos, but you wouldn't use it to play back videos, would you?
Well, isn't there an X.264 player? I mean, isn't that what most distributions would be using for X.264 playback? Well, that's what I'd presumed.
But it actually makes better videos than...
Yeah.
Didn't they say this about LAME as well at some point? LAME's MP3 encoding got so good, refined, that it was the best thing in the world.
X.264 is light years ahead of the rest.
Wow.
So it's proof that free software can work, but it's still patented.
So that's a real problem.
But that's a difference, isn't it? It's a difference between paying for DVD playback, which I can understand because that's the limitations of the hardware and the laws surrounding circumventing the hardware, to getting some kind of indemnity against playing back your movies. That's what I think is interesting. Anyway.
I also see a difference in my head. I see, I'm probably wrong about this, but I feel there's a real difference between an office suite and a codec. In my head, I don't want to pay for an office suite, but I don't mind paying for a codec.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind that paying for a codec when, you know, like the Fluendo stuff adds proper 5.1 DTS decoding.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you know, that's worth it.
It's done a great implementation. And, you know, you cannot make that using getting around the law. You can't say, let's just remake it without patents. Well, you can't. It needs the software. It needs the patents to work. Otherwise, it's not going to operate.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, another no from T.G. Andrews. No, of course not. If Apple, one of the owners of H.264, I think they're just on the board, want other users, they should pay for us. We have a number of very good codecs, Ogg, Theora included, and we're even more on the way. It's like asking whether Canonical should license Microsoft software. We don't need it. A yes from Andrew Cole. I see no reason why we can't have distros that cost money and others that don't. Mandriva's Power Pack was a good example of this. You can have an all-free version and a paid-for version with all the bells and whistles for the consumers who want it. All the other OS makers do it, so why can't Linux as well? Yesterday I bought Fluendo Media Center with DVD and codecs for my 10.04 LTS. It was only $40 and works perfectly. I do agree with him.
$40? How much is a Windows OEM copy?
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's true.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, for a lot of people, we all like freedom and sharing free software. We find it very important. But for a lot of people, the price of Linux is the most important thing. And when you start saying, you know, well, you get Linux, it's free software. By the way, you have to buy X, Y, and Z, and the numbers add up. It makes it less attractive, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Also, is there a framework for Firefox to say, have you bought the codec? Oh, you have. Let's play that movie back. In H.264 format.
Well, yeah, because Firefox can use Totem as a media playing plugin, which in turn uses GStream. It all gets pretty complicated, doesn't
it? So it can, what you're saying?
Technically, yes, yeah. If you've got this GStreamer codec pack, then that should then work in Totem, and then Totem can embed in Firefox. So
it's a nightmare, though, isn't it?
It's a bit of a mess.
It's so nice when you click on an Ogg Vorbis file in Firefox and in Chrome, and it just plays embedded in there regardless of anything else you've got installed.
You said it didn't work a minute ago.
No, Ogg Theora. The video didn't work. The music files work.
Right,
well,
you're explaining. But,
no different layers between them.
No, it is so nice, and I choose that in preference. I'd probably avoid sites if it meant I had to jump through GStreamer you know, hoops.
Andrew Cole's comment did actually make me think about the idea of paying for, you know, Ubuntu Premium, which is, you know, £20, $30, whatever, and gives you the codecs as default. I realised I wouldn't actually want that, because if I'm going to buy the codecs, I don't want to buy them again next to Ubuntu version.
Mm.
I kind of want to buy one Ubuntu, enter my Ubuntu one using their password, and it downloads the codecs again because it knows I've bought them.
Right.
That's what it should be doing, I think, if they're going to do this. And I'd pay for it, $20. I don't use these things very often. You know, I very rarely want to watch H.264 movies.
Mm.
But if it's an optional, I can just flick the switch in Firefox. Why not?
So if you've paid for Fluendo and you're running Ubuntu 10.4 and you get bored with Ubuntu and switch to Fedora, is there some sort of mechanism to take the Fluendo codecs with you?
Yeah, I think so. You just download it again, I guess. It's not attached to the Ubuntu version you're with.
That's good, because we all distro hop now.
Yeah, that's
again,
really important.
Yeah, so it's transferable. And it works too.
Another yes from Mel. Ubuntu is about giving a good experience to its users out of the box. I would love to see Ubuntu ship with DVD, Blu-ray and MP3 playback out of the box, but that's another story. Lian proven or proven? Probably not. For one thing, what is more important is the stuff that's out there now, not the future stuff. Supporting free codecs is more important than bundling something that may not help much existing content, and paying to license commercial code is not a good plan for what purports to be a free OS.
I'd just like to say hello to Lian Proven, because I spoke to him about 10 years ago when he used to write Linux stuff for some magazine or other.
It could be someone who killed him, put him under the and took his identity.
I haven't spoken to him for 10 years. Well, hello.
But he says nothing out there, but surely YouTube is H.264.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone is aware that Flash isn't the greatest plugin around, especially on 64-bit systems. Wouldn't it be nice if you give your mother, grandmother Linux, pay the $20 it gives them H.264, and say, yep, YouTube works out of the box. It just works. Playback in GStreamer, crash-free.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is an essential. It should be an essential part of the operating system. I do understand what Liam's saying about Canonical, and I think I did write about this recently. I think Canonical should go ahead, but they should also perhaps do more to promote the use of free codecs at the same time. It's the same with their online music store only supporting MP3s. Now, I know they can only license the MP3 versions, but it feels a little bit like they're turning away from the community side of their distribution and moving towards the more commercial aspects of a competing operating system.
Has anyone tried that yet, buying music with the Ubuntu One store?
I loaded it up, but I didn't buy anything.
When you start Rhythmbox, it does say, do you want to be able to play MP3s? It's a very big, clear button.
And then you click yes.
Yeah, it used to be the case where you'd have to double-click an MP3 file, and then it tells you, do you want GStream plugins ugly and all this stuff. As you launch Rhythmbox now, it opens up in that thing, and it's got a big button immediately enticing you to download the MP3 codecs.
What, you pay for that? Was it the free?
No, that's free.
Is it Fluendo one?
No, it's...
Is it GStream Ugly?
I think it's GStream Plugins Ugly or bad or illegal or hated or
whatever. That solves the problem, doesn't it? If Ubuntu's happy to let people install MP3 codecs...
I think it is. I can't guarantee that, but I'm pretty sure it is the GStream Ugly.
Maybe it depends on your location. Maybe if you're in the US, you're asked to...
Oh, that'd be nice.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, getting to change software patents because they realise it's holding them back.
Yeah, but then Canonical wouldn't do that because it would halt its adoption, which is, I think, all they're interested in. Almost finally, from Lithium X, whatever floats your boat, I'm generally very pragmatic about these things. OEMs clearly want these codecs, and ultimately, if companies choose Ubuntu because of these codecs, and if Linux gains bigger market share and benefits as a result, I don't think many people will care about the patent issues. Anonymous Penguin, not verified, says, it's Ubuntu. Everything it does is correct. Even if... and finally, Craig S. Blackie. While open solutions without patents should be promoted, certain codecs are so intertwined with society and available technology that new users would expect to be able to play back these mediums, and to the common user would be disappointed otherwise. How many Linux users don't install proprietary codecs seconds after completing a fresh install?
Richard Stallman.
Well, no, I don't, but I probably do over the course of 6 months without even realising it.
Mm, that's true. Just the one-off thing, I need that, I'll go and then, possibly.
So a mixed bag. I think people are pretty open-minded about it, as we are. It's not generally bad, I just wish there was more we could do. I think if Ogg Theora was more competitive, we wouldn't perhaps have to resort to 264 so much.
And with that, you've been eaten by a Gru. Oh, Mike looks confused. Huh? Mike's not sure when to interrupt me now, are you, Mike? Okay, I'll go slowly.
Carry on, Paul.
And with that, we come to the real end of our podcast.
Ah, I got you.
There you go.
You knew what was coming. You knew what was coming. I've been thinking here, you know, it's all the talk about the Games Pack and BZ Flag and stuff. I mean, we just look a bit like, you know, kind of can't be bothered games players who don't really do anything. So I think it's time for a bit of a geek challenge again. I was checking around the ReactOS project the other day, as you do, to see how it's going, the open source Windows implementation. And I saw that its precursor, Fredos, still has a project page on SourceForge. And this goes back to the late 90s. And it made me think, how many projects are there on SourceForge? So you three guys, have a guess. See who's closest.
In total, the number of projects
on SourceForge at the moment.
Okay. Including ones in stage one planning.
Yes, there were a number of projects.
Okay. 250,000.
Okay.
116,116.
Oh. I think there are 324,501.
Well, the two extremely specific people are wrong, but Graham.
Oh.
It's great. It's 250,000, so your 230,000 guess was closest.
I think I said 250.
So did I.
That's how Graham did.
I said 250.
Yeah, and the answer is 230.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how many made it past stage one planning, but as a follow-up to that, can you guess what is the number one most downloaded program on
SourceForge?
Any guesses?
It's MicOS on SourceForge.
No, I took it on Gnutella.
Gnutella, Azurius. What was the Azurius replacement?
It was always the Azurius for a long time. Some hideous...
Some was a frog.
You can show how many words we download.
I'll give you guys credit for this, because the top three most downloaded SourceForge projects are all P2P clients.
Oh, no.
Number one is Emule. Number two is Azurius, which is now called Views.
Ah, yes, that's
and number three is something called Ares Galaxy that I've never heard of, but is another P2P client. So there we are. We're all file sharing. Wearing.
And with such wear suggestions, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes such as they are, including Graham's Kurt Reen's Kurt Ava plugin for KDE. We'll be on the podcast notes on the website, and we're looking forward to reading out any comments you have, so do let us know which of our challenge is the best, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Sayonara.